The first Christians expected that Jesus would return in glory to judge the living and the dead very soon after his ascension and the day of Pentecost. They expected it to happen any day now. And so they waited. They prepared. And yet it didn't happen as soon as they expected. In fact, here we are so many, many years later, and still the day of the Lord has not come. We still wait. We're still told to prepare. And each year, as we move through our liturgical calendar, we come to the end of the year. There are but two Sundays, counting today, until Advent, the beginning of the new year. And at the end of the year, in that first week of Advent, our thoughts turn again to the second coming, to the day of the Lord, to when Jesus will come in glory to judge the living and the dead. And so we're admonished, especially on these Sundays, to be expectant, to watch, to wait, to be ready. The day of the Lord is not, however, always depicted as one of joy and celebration. In our first lesson from the prophet Zephaniah, it's actually quite the opposite. It's a day of destruction, of God making war on the people, of wrath, of judgment, of suffering. For the people have not been faithful. They have not been waiting patiently and doing the will of God, and there will be punishment. This can be avoided, however, by living faithfully, by repenting and returning to the Lord. It raises, I think, the question of how do we live in in-between time like this? How do we live expectant and watchful and waiting, ready for the return of the Lord and yet not knowing when it might happen? How do we avoid becoming like the people Zephaniah is addressing who have fallen away from the ways of God? That question is at the heart of Matthew's gospel. Matthew is very concerned with how do we wait? How do we make sure we are ready and prepared? Matthew is writing to first century Jewish Christians who have that keen sense that Jesus will come again. But how do you wait? What does that look like? And so in this part of Matthew's gospel, there are four parables about the end of the age, about what that looks like and how to be ready for it. Last week we had the parable of those wise maidens and the foolish maidens who were waiting for the bridegroom to return to start the wedding feast. And those who were prepared, they had their lamps, they had their oil, they were ready, were able to enter into the feast. Those who didn't have their oil, who were not prepared, found themselves excluded from that feast. They weren't ready, the door was locked, and they were in darkness. This week's parable follows immediately after that parable, and it has again its theme of how to be ready. These are all told during the last days of Jesus' life. He's entered into Jerusalem, and in a few days he will be arrested and killed. And throughout this time, he is teaching his followers what it is to be faithful in following Jesus, what it means to be a disciple. And he's also challenged the authorities of the temple, those in charge of teaching the people, admonishing them for not seeing the new work that God is doing. And he has, in fact, taken great risk in coming to Jerusalem, for it's Jerusalem where he will lose his life. And yet he goes. He goes this one last time, and he is teaching his disciples and us what it means to be faithful in following and waiting until his return. And so it is that today's gospel, Jesus tells a parable about the kingdom of heaven. As parables often are, they tell us something about the nature of God and of God's reign. And in this parable, we have a master who is going away for a long time. That sounds a little like Jesus, doesn't it? Jesus ascending, going away for a long time. We don't know when he will come back. Before going, the master summons three of his slaves, and he entrusts to them money, talents. And in the first century, a talent was an extremely large sum of money. One talent, scholars estimate, was the equal of about 15 years' wages for a day laborer. That's a huge sum. And so to get five talents is to be given 75 years' worth of income for a day laborer. So the master is being exceedingly generous and entrusting large amounts of money to these servants. He gives them no instructions. He leaves it up to their choice and to their free will how they respond to this generous act. And upon his return, upon seeing that two of those to whom he entrusted great sums have doubled them, he rejoices and celebrates with them that they have taken those talents and turned them into even more. He rejoices and is happy and invites them to come and share in the joy of his kingdom. That sure sounds like the invitation to the wedding feast, to the banquet of the Messiah. There is, however, that third slave. He did not take risk with his large sum of money. He did not find a way to invest it and double it, as the first two did. And in fact, he frankly is afraid of the master. And so he does what anyone in the first century did when they wanted to have a sure, safe place for something of value. He digs a hole and buries it. In doing so, he knows where it is. It's unlikely anyone else will find it. It will be safe. It will not, however, double in value. Nothing will be done with that sum. It won't be used for any purpose. It'll just be hidden away until it's dug up. So the master returns, and unlike saying to the other two, "You have done so well, come into my kingdom," to the third he says, "You are wicked and lazy. I know you're afraid of me. You know that I reap where I do not sow. You at least could have put that sum in the bank, a bank which would have paid interest. I would have gotten something back for it." So the master is displeased, takes it away from him, that talent, and throws him into the outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. He's not invited into that banquet at the end of time. This parable is, I think, warning us that we should not act timidly in response to God's great generosity. And in fact, that talent, that word from the Greek, which originally meant a unit of measure, is the root of the same word we have today, talent. And I think this parable is about not just our money, but about all we are, our time, our talent, our treasure, all of it being a gift from God, a God who is so generous and abundantly bestows these blessings on us. And the call to not be scared, to not act from fear, to not bury what we have been given, but to share, to give away, to be as generous as God has been to us. And in fact, to take great risk just as Jesus does. To not hold on so tightly, but to give our way, just as Jesus gives away his life for our redemption. So we're called to take great risks in giving away what God has shared with us for the well-being of others. You may have noticed that this parable has some undercurrents of stewardship in it, and it comes to us in the midst of our stewardship campaign. I don't know that the planners of the lectionary intended this, but I consider it as a preacher to be a real gift. For inherent in today's gospel is that question of stewardship, of what it means to be given gifts by God, which we are charged to care for, to manage, to be faithful and responsible with. And that question, are we called, like the first two, to abundantly give away and in return be given so much more than we can ask or imagine? Or are we called, like the third, to dig a hole, to bury, to hold on to ourselves out of fear and not give away what we have? As Christian people, we are called always to be people of thanksgiving. It's no accident that in a few moments we will celebrate the Eucharist, and that Eucharistic prayer is called itself the Great Thanksgiving. Eucharist itself means Great Thanksgiving in Greek. Everything we do, we are called to do with thanksgiving. God has so abundantly blessed us. Some of us, we have been blessed with even more than we need. And we are called to respond with thanks and gratitude to God for all the blessings we have. And at this stewardship time, you're asked to contemplate, to pray about, to think about, to talk with family about your financial sharing that you will give to this parish for next year, as the vestry tries to figure out how much do we have, what will our budget look like. You're also asked to share your time and your talent with this parish. Share from those gifts God has given you. This is a personal and a private conversation for you to have. Only you can decide how to respond to all that God has blessed you with. But we're asking you to be serious and intentional in having that conversation and praying about it. And then in filling out a pledge card so that we can know, as leadership of this parish, what we can expect for next year. Now, I think it can be complicated, especially thinking about money. We don't like talking about money, many of us. And it's not always easy to assess how much do I actually have? And the other question, how much do I actually need to live? Or how much do I need in retirement? Or to support my children as they prepare to or go off to college? How much do I have? How much do I need? And then the messages from the culture often come back telling us that we should be fearful. You can't possibly have enough. Hold on tightly. Protect your family. There's not enough for everyone. Though we live in the richest nation on earth and have been so abundantly blessed, the culture tells us, be careful. Hold tightly onto your money. And some people even feel that they don't, as an individual, have responsibility to others. There's a sense of individualism and holding tightly what we have. Last Sunday, a week ago today, the Episcopal Cafe blog had a post talking about a new book that has been published. The book is called The Paradox of Generosity by Christian Smith and Hilary Davidson. These two, in preparing for this book, did some study of generosity in the United States, and they found that only 3% of Americans give away 10% or more of their resources, whereas 85% of Americans give away less than 2% of their income. And they thought, well, that's an interesting statistic. I wonder why that is. So they went off to figure out some of the reasons that might be true. And in talking with people around the country, they found that many believe generosity is just not important. And there are plenty who live in fear that there isn't enough, so they need to hold on tightly to all they have. And some even express the belief that the poor should help themselves. We don't need to worry about them. One woman who lives in California said this, "Do I feel an obligation to do things that are not going to harm other people? Yes, I do. Do I feel an obligation to care for other people? No." And so they found that many people fail to see a connection between themselves and others. They see themselves as autonomous individuals and don't see how what they do affects the lives of others. There's a sense of a fear of not having enough and of I, myself, being an entity alone unto myself. The authors also found, however, a connection between generosity and personal well-being. Here's what they say. Generosity often triggers neurochemical systems that increase pleasure and reduce stress. It also has the capacity of reducing the maladaptive self-absorption that many ungenerous Americans experience. By giving away some of our resources for the well-being of others, we can enhance our own. By clinging to what we have, we shortchange ourselves. By clinging to what we have, we shortchange ourselves. This parable teaches us that those who gave away generously received even more, experienced life abundant, and then came to experience life abundant in the next age. The one who buried the treasure, held on to it out of fear, didn't get to experience those blessings. And so in this stewardship season, I invite you to prayerfully, thoughtfully, honestly, look at how God has abundantly blessed you. And then to ask, how will you respond to that generosity? And in particular, how will you support this parish in the coming year, sharing with the community your time, your talents, and your treasure? May we be moved by God to respond to God's great generosity and abundant love of us by also being generous and loving. And may we dare to risk trusting that God will and does care for us, living as Jesus lived, risking to give away what we have, just as Jesus gave away his life for our salvation. And in practicing generosity, may we know the deep joy that God has in store for us and come at last to enter into the joy of the fullness of God's kingdom. Amen.